had not been there before him. Happy eclipse, everyone. Thanks for joining us.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 34th annual Hawthorne Street Fair, Sunday, August 27th on Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard. The Hawthorne Street Fair, now in its 34th year, features music, activities for kids and adults alike, entertainment, local businesses, and community vendors. Again, that's the 34th annual Hawthorne Street Fair, Sunday, August 27th from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. on Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
By the mole in the ground, I'd root that mountain down, and I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Tune in to KBOO Monday mornings at 9 for the Old Mole Variety Hour, your source for radically democratic news, views, reviews, and interviews, stories of ordinary and extraordinary people working to root down the oppressive institutions of capitalism. That's the Old Mole Variety Hour, Monday mornings at 9.
KBOO Portland.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO, your community radio station. I am Cecil Prescott. This is More Talk Radio. Today is Monday, the 21st of August, 2017. And we are waiting, for the sun to go behind the moon or something like that. In the meantime, we thank you for joining us and being a participant of our radio program. Certainly, we are aware of much that has happened in our community and throughout the world. Our guest this morning will be Teresa Rayford of Don't Shoot PDX, and we'll have the chance to engage with her for some conversation about her thoughts about policing in this city and in this state, some of the challenges and opportunity she faces, and what can organizers and activists do to transform our society. In the meantime, we welcome your conversation and thoughts by giving us a call here at 503-231-8187. If you're listening to our radio program, let me remind you of what will come up on KBOO this morning. At 9, it will be the Old Mole Variety Hour. There will be comments about astrology, science, and the eclipse. Also, there will be an interview with the director of the Center for Food Safety on Farming, Soil Depletion, and Climate Change, plus a review of Stanley Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey. Coming up later at 10, Barbara Bernstein, Locus Focus, will present Sculpted by Fire, a journey into a landscape that for thousands of years have been shaped by wildfires and that is now in the epicenter of political inferno. At 11 is Voices from Charlottesville. We will take you inside the mass prayer meeting service that took place at St. Paul's Memorial Church that was under siege from white supremacists. We'll also have the opportunity to hear from the Reverend Tracy Blackman and Dr. Cornell West. KBOO keeps you informed and involved, and we need your help. So go to kboo.fm and click on Donate to become a member. And some of you might be wondering, as As you continue to listen to More Talk Radio, where is Celeste? Well, Celeste got stuck in Eclipse traffic, and she is stuck and will not be able to make it here this morning. But in the meantime, we have you, and I hope you are able to share some of your thoughts on the events nationally and locally surrounding police reform and the struggle for justice, racial justice here in this country. We have the opportunity to think about where do we go from here. In 1967, Martin Luther King's last book was entitled Where Do We Go From Here? Community or Chaos? And in that book, he posed the question of what type of society are we shaping. 1967 was in the midst of struggles in inner cities and indeed throughout the country as what seemed like as if the United States was at a moment of decision and certainly at a moment of crisis as people struggled against an unjust war and also struggle against injustices in this country. A few years prior to 1964, the civil rights movement seemed to be at a peak. We all are familiar with the March on Washington in 1963. Following the March on Washington in 1964, the President Lyndon Baines Johnson signed into law the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Let us be mindful that that act was able to become law because of the organizings of hundreds of thousands of people throughout the United States and indeed in many rural and urban communities, forcing federal legislators to pass over the objection of some people who wanted to hold on to the old order. Into legislation, which for the gave teeth to the promise that this country is created equal and justice should be the benchmark by which all of the nation's actions should be judged by. In 1964 Civil Rights Act enabled the nation to stand up and said that what may seem hard to believe in this age, but segregation, discrimination, and public accommodation and church is illegal. Follow up by the further legislation in 1965. So as the 60s entered into a period of struggle and activism. By the mid-1960s, it seems as if the dream of a society of equality would soon come to fruition. By the summer of 1965, we are aware of the Watts riots, and urban America continued to experience uprisings in cities throughout the nations. By 1967, when Martin Luther King was able to write that book, he had experienced 1966 and the rise of the Black Power movement. His former allies, SCLC, and leaders began to question maybe not the motives, but especially the tactics of those in the forefronts of such mainstream organization as the NAACP Corps and Dr. Martin Luther King's organization, Southern Christian Leadership Conference, certainly began to question the tactics of nonviolence and its effectiveness to transform, to move, to push our nations and its leaders to a society of more equality. As young people began to question the leadership and the tactic and indeed the wisdom of elders, we heard, and this nation heard, an uproar of cries for different ways of approaching these issues, and certainly began questioning the legitimacy, if I may say, of the possibility of this nation as it was constructed to transform itself into an equal society. We began to see on a mass level critique of the American social system, its American economic system, and pushed against the wall leaders who had held the highest esteem and certainly were leaders that the leaders of the United States trusted began to be questioned by younger folks, but also by people who began to offer a critique of the American society. If you were listening earlier, you heard a discussion with the late Dick Gregory with Amy Goodman. And many of us who were not familiar with Dick Gregory, I hope you have the opportunity to research his activism and his ability to challenge the powers that be. Certainly by 1968, as Amy Goodman reminded us, Dick Gregory, who had a longtime activist and critique of the American society, was able to run for president, certainly as a write-in candidate. And among his efforts, among his platform, was the effort for peace in Southeast Asia and a more equitable society in the United States. Flash forward 50 years later, that dream, that hope remains just that, beyond the reach of many, many people. So then, the question is, how do we continue to struggle for social justice in the era of the 45th president of the United States, and whether or not different tactics are needed? What are some of your thoughts as we wind down the first 6 or 7 months of the Trump presidency, and what are your thoughts on the activism that has occurred throughout the nation in the past 3 or 4 years? Activism which has focused on police brutality, social inequality, and the desire for this society to, if not reform itself, if that's possible, but certainly to transform itself into something other. Are you hopeful or are you disappointed? So, a question I will pose to you is, where do we go from here? Community or chaos? Give us your thoughts as we ponder this. Are you optimistic or are you pessimistic? Are you struggling with the hope that things will change, or are you struggling because that's all we have to do? Our numbers here on KBOO is 503-231-8255. 8187. Give us a call and share your thoughts. This is an opportunity to call in early and share what are things that are possible to do in terms of our call to action. What do you offer or what do you suggest? My name is Cecil Prescott, and you are listening to your community radio station. This is More Talk Radio. Excuse me, the microphone was battling me. This is More Talk Radio here on KBOO. Community or chaos is a question today. What are your thoughts? Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. And share your opinions about how we should organize and what direction we should go. Let's see if we are able to construct certain questions or thoughts. Hopefully joining us shortly is Teresa Rayford, who, as many of you know, is a community activist and organizer. And maybe we will have the opportunity to talk to Teresa in terms of how she identifies herself as an activist or organizer and her thoughts as we move forward. One of the things we wanted to focus on in our conversation with Teresa is the Portland Police Bureau. The hiring of a new police chief. The new police chief, I believe, is from Oakland, California, Danielle Outlaw. She will be let me check my memory banks. I think the third woman police chief and the third African American. She will be the first black woman as police chief in Oregon. Is this a sign of hope? Will things change? Will someone from outside of the Portland Police Bureau be able to make transformation possible? What are your thoughts about the new police chief? And if she was sitting here, what questions or statements you would like for her to hear? So imagine, Danielle Outlaws has your ear. What would you say to the new police chief? Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. Respond to that question or that which we posed earlier in terms of where do we go from here in the terms of Dr. King's 1967 book, Community or Chaos? I await your wisdom and your thoughts here, and join, have the opportunity to speak and let people know, let this community know your thoughts. Our numbers, 503-231-8187, and the phones are suddenly not lit. Where are the people? Perhaps you're on the road or stuck on the road and trying to follow the sun. Even if that's the case, you have the opportunity to slow down, pick up your phone, and give us a call, 503-231-8187. I would also offer you a email address, but strangely enough, maybe it's because of the eclipse, my computer died on me. I suddenly not working, and if I was fearful, I would say it might be a sign of things to come. So we're going to have to use the old-fashioned technology today by telephone. Give us a call, 503-231-8187, And let's hear some other voices, other than my voice. I certainly would welcome your thoughts and your advice this morning, and also your views on a couple of topics I shared with you, how things are happening in our country, believing chaos or community, or if the new police chief was here, what would you say to her? Again, 503-231-8187. And I think we have a caller on the line. And we will hear from Nikki. Good morning, Nikki.
Hi. I just have to say that I had a couple of questions if the police chief were there with you.
Yes.
Okay. I happened to notice on weekend TV on OPB, NPR, that there was someone representing Portland answering questions about how to handle mass protests. I guess we're the ones in the country that had the most. I don't know why, but they had someone who looked like they were of color answering questions. I had never seen them before. I was just wondering why the police chief herself was not on that show, at least with this person. And then also, I wanted to know how she plans to improve relations between the administration and the union, the police union, where I feel like that's what's going to have to change first before we get any change in the rank and file. That's just my opinion. And then finally, I would say to her, good luck. I'm pulling for you, and I hope it works.
Okay. So let me just ask you to see if I hear you correctly. The second question you would like to pose is how she would plan to improve relationship between the police union and who? The city administration? Or I'm not sure I heard.
Well, essentially, I think that unless there is from the ground up change in attitude from the police union, from being us against them to let's all work this race thing out, we are not going to have any change, no matter who is the police chief, no matter who is the mayor, whoever it is. That's mm-hmm. my belief.
Okay.
And I've lived here, 25 years or so, and seen several things. And gosh, the race, I knew young people that didn't even think white young people that didn't even think we had a race issue. So I don't want it to go underground again. I want it to get cleaned out.
Very much so. Well, thank you. And hopefully the police chief will have the opportunity as she settles in and takes up her position. She will be able to respond to those questions and with you and all of us transform our society, our city. Hey, thank you so much.
She's going to have a lot of public support.
Initially.
Otherwise, she's going to be taking a beating from the inside.
That's certainly a possibility. She's an outsider. She probably wasn't the police union's top choice, and it's a tough role to fill.
Yes.
Hey, thank you so much.
We need all of the public to support her.
Okay. Well, thank you, Nikki, and thank you for sharing your thoughts this morning.
Yes. Thank you.
You listen to KBOO. This is More Talk Radio. A couple of questions we posed this morning is if the police chief was, new police chief was here, what would you say to her? And also, as our community continues to struggle, are we moving to community or chaos? 503-231-8187. And let's hear from Ross. Good morning, Ross.
Well, good morning, Cecil. I am a faithful listener of your program, as I think you know. Usually about 10, 15 minutes into the program, I might pick up the phone and give you a call, and almost always, because you have so many faithful listeners ahead of me, I don't get through. And so this morning when you begged us to call you, I have to let you know I'm here.
Great.
And so but first of all, I'm going to start by thanking you for last Monday's program. It was wonderful that you resurrected a figure from my memory of Julius Lester.
Yes.
Who was a brilliant young organizer back in the days of the 60s, and I didn't know what happened with him, and so I'm learning that he's working as a professor.
Julius. He's a retired professor, I believe, Massachusetts. I forgot the name of the university, and he recently just came out of the hospital. He had an illness, but he's, from what I understand, he's doing much better these days.
A beautiful guy with a beautiful philosophy that I think was very much in service of us in those days. And in terms of looking at our own challenges and looking at things like police reform and so forth, I'm reminded of the attitude of never give up on anybody, and so you treat everybody with respect and look for their good side. And I think it wouldn't be wrong to return to that in our relations with the police. They're all people, and give them a chance to show their best colors and respect them as people. And if we organize ourselves along those lines, I think that will be a good start.
So you think that's possible for the community and police to recognize the humanity and bring people together, the police force and those who are struggling for justice?
Absolutely, because if we take other approaches, it simply plays into the hands of the right wing, who wants to portray the rabble, the left critique, and as rabble and people who are disrespectful and et cetera, being simply not nice and being discourteous.
So it sounds like it sounds like you remain hopeful.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. But let me say something. I did have an awakening over the last weeks as we approached the solstice moment. Not the solstice moment, mm-hmm. but the eclipse. The eclipse is a very ordinary celestial event. And what is remarkable is that this is going to be the most watched and the most photographed, and no doubt the most. It's going to be the eclipse that had the greatest ecological footprint left on the Earth, because we as a society have a way of turning something as simple as the eclipse moment into hype. And I'm just amazed at how public radio and other people, they just have jumped on the bandwagon to hype this event, so that people are supposed to go to the path of totality.
Yeah.
And I'm a little afraid that that's a good image of what our society does. We can just reflect in a moment and imagine that 500 years ago when an eclipse came by, it probably didn't. The poor moon came by and it didn't leave an ecological footprint. But today we simply respond in the way that capitalism knows best, by hyping and hyping and hyping. And so we've clogged our wilderness with people, and I wonder if somebody would do an estimate of what is the ecological footprint of this passage of the moon across the face of the sun.
That's a fantastic question. Yes, the footprint and also the commercialism surrounding this act of nature.
That we can turn anything into commerce and hype. I'm amazed that we haven't figured a way to do it, because I think some of the other beautiful moments, like the solstice and equinox, but somehow or other, it's never been been so so played up as this eclipse.
As this, well, I know some people are making a whole lot of money, so
we can commodify the eclipse.
Thinking of some of the
people who were in the movement for a better world back in the days that when I was coming up in the 60s. And
yeah.
I'm remembering a friend, and he had a great insight. His name was Peter Hennig. He worked in the underground newspaper movement in New York. He was the son of a psychiatrist. He was a graduate student in history, but he had brilliant insight. He loved to read the Wall Street Journal, as most of the leftists I knew in those days did. They read the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times and everything.
Yes.
They just read a lot. And they tried to come to an understanding of the system of capitalism. And he came to an insight which was really, for him, I'm afraid it was depressing, and it is a depressing thought, but it's one that might help us wake up. In those days, we had two sides of what seemed to be a movement. One was the cultural radicalism, where somehow people somehow felt that they just broke with all of the constraints of bourgeois society and had lots of music and love and maybe a little bit of unrestrained sexual interaction or whatever, that the world was going to change. And then the political radicals, which I was more on that side, and we kind of were the boring people who just kept those darn presses running and this and that. And
right.
But what Peter saw, he said that capitalism is watching all of this going on. And capitalism has a great, it's almost like a device where it has a recording machine. They have microphones everywhere, and they're observing all these potentially dangerous but creative changes in society. And what capitalism does is that it takes all of the things that are dangerous, and it finds their undangerous part and turns that into hype and more capitalism and more commodities. And so that no sooner than you have people dressing with flowers in their hair, and then you've got styles that are
certainly
selling on, and you've turned it in. Then they turn up the amplification of everything that is not dangerous to capitalism and blow it back to the society.
That's a great, great insight, and certainly we have seen the demonic power of capitalism and how it's able to transform things and continue its power by the way, commodifies so much of society. So thank you so much, Ross.
Okay. I have a great day and a great program.
Okay. Thank you so much. Listen.
Bye.
And you're listening to More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil Prescott. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. We began with two questions posed. If the new Portland police chief was here, what would you say to her? And also, to responding to Martin Luther King's question from his 1967 book, Where Do We Go From Here, Community or Chaos? Where do we go from here? So give us a call, 503-231-8187. But first, let's listen to Julian. Good morning, Julian.
Good morning, Cecil. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Well, I don't have much time, so I got to make this quick. But I think the one thing that I would ask her, if I could ask her a question, is if she has any plans of being a champion in the police force, of working on training officers to be more of a de-escalators of situations than, pursuers of situations, like a lot of police seem to be doing nowadays. So I'm kind of wondering if she has any thoughts on that. And in regards to the community coming together versus dividing, I did I heard something really good the other day. It was in order for a community or a society to remain tolerant, we must remain intolerant of intolerance. So I think that there's a certain amount of disconnect that has to happen in order to connect.
Yes. Could you, I know you said you only had a short time. I came across maybe that similar statement a few days ago. Unpack it a little bit, because, you know, we certainly the mantra is we should be a tolerant society. But I heard if you're tolerant of those who are intolerant, soon your ability to be a tolerant society is destroyed.
Yes. Exactly.
Well, certainly worse to think about. And I'm not sure your first question to the police chief of whether or not you'll be a champion of training police to de-escalate. Certainly we hear that the rhetoric around talk like community-based policing and stuff like that. At the same time, oftentimes in public demonstrations, we see this RoboCop image of RoboCops confronting demonstrators or protesters or people exercising their right to assemble. So,
it's
difficult.
Exactly.
Yeah. Hey, thank you so much, Julian. You raised
some
great thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a nice morning.
You too. And you're listening to More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil Prescott. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Let's go to our next caller. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning, Cecil. Thank you for this wonderful program. I would offer a few thoughts. First of all, if unchecked growth in the medical model is called cancer, how come unchecked growth in the economic model is called progress?
Yeah.
And in light of that, I think it was Aristotle that said 2,400 years ago that poverty is the parent of revolution and crime. So if we want to do away with crime and revolution, we have to do away with poverty. And I think the way to get there is to stop talking about what constitutes a meaningful minimum wage and start talking about what constitutes a meaningful maximum wage above which it's taxed at 150%. Then we could seriously start talking about some equality and understand that maybe it's a steady state economic system that we should be chasing, not a capitalistic state.
Well, that is certainly flipping the thought process and the reasoning of a society on its head, talking about what is the maximum rather than the minimum. How do you think we will be able to challenge the myth, the belief, of the goodness of unmitigated economic growth?
I think really in some ways there's only one way, and that is that when people truly love their kids and their grandkids and recognize that the future that we are leaving them is seriously compromised on all fronts, not just a few, on every single one. I don't believe anymore we even have science.
We have what?
We don't have science.
Oh, science, yes.
Because science requires an open, transparent process that looks at differing ideas and hypotheses. When those differing ideas and hypotheses are quenched by the Oregon Department of Forestry, for example, and where they will not address how their their mission statement of greatest permanent value reflects the future today, where 2 to 3% of the people in Lane County are employed by the wood products industry, and 40 years ago it was 71%. So how does that represent greatest permanent value? And they will quench the question rather than address it. That is the state of our society right now, and that's just one example. There's many.
Yeah. So what do you think to reverse that? You mentioned science, which has become sort of like a dirty word so much in our society, certainly in the I believe the current national administration, where denial of what we think of facts as nonsense, and in a world where we think of alternative facts and alt reality, how do we get people to become reasonable and argue based on facts and science?
Part of the problem is we can't even agree on definitions of words anymore. You know, if there is not an agreement of definitions, how can you possibly have dialogue or discussion?
Yeah. Now, is that a result of a postmodernism, or what do you think, of being unable to agree on definition or words?
I think it grows out of the psychological aspects of the mass psychology of fascism, which William Reich wrote about in the 30s in Germany.
Yes.
And I think that the roots of fascism and of scapegoatism and of you know, trying to make oneself feel better by putting someone else down rather than being centered in oneself and recognizing the universality of being, that doesn't allow us to see what's before us. I think it's psychological and cultural mostly. And it's learned, and it's perpetuated in universities. And that's why universities aren't coming out with solutions that integrate the environmental, economic, and social at the same time.
How do you suggest people resist this?
I think there has to be a total shutdown, frankly. I think that there has to be, you know, I think that we're completely at the place, as Einstein once said, you can't fix a problem with the same thinking that created it.
Yes.
And I think that's exactly where we are at, and we need a totally new system, and one that recognizes the wisdom of Terry Tempest Williams when she said, the eyes of the future are looking back at us, and they are praying that we see beyond our own time.
So let me ask you one final question. Do you think it's possible? Are you hopeful or pessimistic on this cultural, political, economic change?
I believe that 99% of the evidence doesn't lead to hopefulness. But I think that being human, we have to be hopeful. And we have to understand that we're being hopeful not for ourselves, but for our kids and our grandkids.
Great. Well thank you for leaving us with those words and the way in which we change is by remaining hopeful. Thank you. I have to go now. I think we have our guests on the phone. So
thank you, Cecil.
Thank you for your thoughts, Craig. You're listening to More Talk Radio on KBOO. I'm Cecil Prescott, and joining us is Teresa Rayford. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I am well. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I have a pregnant daughter-in-law, and it's Christmas Day, so we kind of went crazy this morning.
Oh. I hope everything's all right. And
It is. Okay. I didn't think it was safe for her to leave.
Oh,
so.
No. Good, good.
Yeah, crazy. Well, good morning, though. Thank you for having me on the show.
So, yeah, I'm really glad to speak with you. And, from the outside, your life looks so busy. You are so involved in the community. And thank you for doing what you do first. I want to share that with you.
Well, thank you.
I was wondering if you have any thoughts on the new police chief? Do you have any input? Did people ask you about her? What were your thoughts?
Around the anniversary of the Mike Brown anniversary, we usually have this discussion forum. Mm-hmm. And so I got a lot of calls from press about her and her new role. And I told them over and over again that I didn't expect that there was going to be an announcement without community speaking out about what they saw in the candidates or some type of engagement. So it's kind of shocking. Then at the same time, it was during the time that we're having these anniversaries for, like Larnell Bruce, a little child that was killed by white supremacists. And then we have the Max trains and we have Demetria Hester's issues going on. And so I'm thinking of all the inflamed racism that's happening around us and the fact that we have a black woman that's being our police chief in a white, predominantly white city with a very racial problem. We have a very serious white supremacist problem here in a lot of our institutions. So in my own opinion, I kept telling them, I just don't feel that she's safe. I feel that it's a propaganda tactic by our city. But at the same time, as a black woman, I don't want to, degrade her own personality. But I know that we've been used by the power structures since we were brought to this country. So it's not anything new to me that they would put a black woman in a position where not only she would bring, for them, a sense of relief of guilt from white supremacy. But for us, just another annoyance to why isn't it someone from our community? What is the difference between black and blue when they're using a uniform and not standing against the problems that they're facing as a police force? I hope that maybe she'll show us something different by standing in solidarity with like those 50 officers in New York and some of these pastors around the country that are telling black police officers and law enforcement officials to speak out and stand in solidarity with this movement because it affects all of us.
Yeah, it's certainly, I would imagine, I mean, thank you. I think you were very insightful in talking about how she might be positioned or some of the reasons she might have been chosen as police chief and some of the challenges she faces as a black woman. Were you or any people you trust part of the process of hiring or of the police?
Was I aware of any of the people?
Were you involved or people you trust involved in the process?
No, not at all. And even people that I heard from that said that they were involved have never actually organized or advocated for community that is seeking accountability. A lot of those people, I mean, they were, in my opinion and in some of their words, picked because they were black. There were county workers, people that work for the city, people that are already a part of the system and actually mandated under the same directives as the police bureau. They're employees, co-employees, co-workers. They might not be in the same departments, but if they're being paid by the same agencies and the same federal dollars are coming to them for state or city or whatever, why not talk to people that aren't sitting at the table with law enforcement as a bureau partner or a city employee? You know, why not talk to the general public that has had, like, the parents that I've advocated for that have had children being assaulted or murdered by police officers that are working consistently because of their trauma, just like I am, to work towards process and policies? The people that are standing up for Black Lives in our community are people that are directly related to the system problems and state oppression But we've been met with force, brutality, propaganda now. That is what I feel about our new chief of police. I believe that's propaganda, because transparency and a commitment to community would have included us.
We're speaking this morning with Teresa Rayford of Don't Shoot PDX, and we're getting some of her thoughts on where we are as a community. This is More Talk Radio on KBOO. And Teresa, what do you think, where should people, well, first of all, how should people respond or organize, and what are things that people can do to help create the vision you have?
Well, I think we just need to get out into our community more. I've been doing these bystander intervention trainings, and a lot of organizations and organizers have come to the training, and they're pitching the people, come join with us and organize and protest. And what people really need to do is they need to start organizing and meeting their neighbors. They need to start getting really active within the five-mile radius of where they live in their communities, because that's what we're not doing. We see politicians knocking on doors during the time that they're wanting you to elect them. But when community wants to stand up and show support against white supremacy, you have to do it in your own neighborhood. First, you got to start at home. And so I just think that everybody needs to figure out what kind of activities, what kind of events are happening in their community where they can build community. Get into some volunteering around the corner from your house. Find out what the people are doing at the churches in your neighborhood. Even if you're not religious, do something that's action-orientated and building and strengthening community. And stay active. You can check us out on Don't Shoot Portland or go to the Facebook, but stay active with, you know, working and building education around, you know, social justice. It's very important to know what you're dealing with when you want to stand up and fight for your rights, or when you want to say that you're an anti-racist or a Black Lives Matter activist.
And you mentioned that you've been doing trainings around bystanders intervention. Is that something that currently happening, or are there ways in which people can participate, or is this something you do for groups or organizations?
Yes, a lot of people since the mass murders have been contacting our organization because we have been doing community safety planning. So now, of course, you know, the dominant culture calls this bystander intervention.
Yes.
And so I've been doing several of them. I've done them at the Sierra Club, at all these different spaces. And I think there's one coming up Wednesday. I'll put the information on the Don't Shoot Portland. But I'm allowing organizations and individuals to just co-host with me. You find the location, let's pick a date, and then let's provide this training to your network. A lot of people were wanting me to invite it on my page, but the ones that I do on the Don't Shoot Portland page are for communities of color, so that we can communicate together and find out what is bystander intervention, how does that affect us, how do we get involved, because I don't see speaking to one part of culture about anti-racism and what strategies to use without building community, it won't work. So we're all out, and like you said, we stay busy, stay active in the community, using art now as a measure of consciousness, but using education as the key. So
very, very much so as part of education. You have been on the forefront of a lot of activism in our community. And what gives you the courage to continue?
Love. I love my community. I love my family. I love thinking about the empowerment and the inspiration that we can give to our children so that we encourage them to be stronger. And it just makes me want to continue doing it. I'm watching the fruits of that labor in our community. So as long as I can see change happening, I'm just going to continue to be encouraged. And it's love that drives me. So.
Well, that's powerful, that it's love that empowers you and keeps you going. So what you also, because you've been so vocal and so out there, I'm sure that there have been times when you have been either attack, I don't know physically, but certainly verbally by people and forces. How do you remain encouraged? Is it the power of love that enable you to keep going?
Well, I trust God, and I believe in everything that I'm doing because he gives me the strength and guidance. So when people are being negative, I kind of make them invisible. I know, you know, how that feels. And sometimes you can just tune it out, and I have no choice. I'm not going to listen to someone else when I'm praying to my Father for guidance. So they can go somewhere with that.
Okay. We're speaking with Teresa Rayford, who is a community. I wanted to ask you the question, do you consider yourself an activist or organizer, or how would you describe the work you do?
I'm a community organizer.
Uh-huh. So part of what you do is building community, and that's an important part of who you are and what you do.
Yes, sir. I think that's the only way we can get to where we're going.
Okay. Well, I'm going to hold on right there. It's Les is on the other line, and I think she has a question for you, Teresa.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Okay. So, Les?
Yes, I'm here. Hi, Teresa. How are you doing today?
Good morning. I'm doing all right. Thank you.
Good. My biggest question, having worked both inside and outside the public safety network in Portland, is to find out what kinds of support you've been able to move the police bureau to for good officers to stand up against bad policing and bad officers. And that's the biggest question, because a lot of the officers that I work with who are really good people and good officers didn't feel safe in turning in some of their colleagues who were not as honest and upright as they should be. And that seems to be one of the biggest challenges I think any of our police force organizations face. Have you been successful in moving us toward that? And do you think that's something we might be able to look forward to with our new chief?
Well, that's one of the things that I was saying to Brother Cecil when I first got on the line, was that I hope that she takes that up. I hope that as the leader of the police bureau here in Portland, that she influences them to take that stance, because when you have 50 people of color that work for the New York Police Department standing up in support of, like, Colin Kaepernick and his stand against police brutality, that's a large message. That's a huge message as people of color. And when you listen to what they're saying as far as the way they've been treated and the things that they've seen occur and the complaints that they've filed, they know that their lives are in danger, and they are living in that fear and that trauma the same way we are as civilians. So I'm just hoping that with leadership comes courage. You know, I'm hoping with leadership comes courage, that if we see people doing that across the country, that we say, okay, this is the time to stand in solidarity, because numbers do matter. And when people are educating and organizing, that's something happening now. That's not something you have to wait for. That's something you have to get involved in. So I'm just hoping that as a leader, that's what she does. I think it would be in her best interest and ours.
Now, with the dismantling of any real and potent police oversight on the outside, you know, community-led, are there any other organizations or groups that you might recommend to stand in solidarity with besides Hands Up Portland?
Well, I would say that what we have to do is just start getting people to hold themselves accountable and helping people file complaints. Because there's so many organizations out here, but if we're moderating and discussing and dialoguing and having courageous conversations rather than filing investigations and demanding outcomes, then that's not helping anybody. Our organization, from the time that someone contacts us, we're looking for legal support for that person. I do a lot of the activism that I do just so that we can empower organizations like the NLG and the ACLU, because we definitely need lawyers. And so if there's organizations that are helping you with legal support, like the Innocence Project, the Oregon Justice Resource Center, I would say the National Lawyers Guild, because you know there's lawyers like Ashley Albus that's suing the school districts and everybody else on our behalf. The only way to break these systems is to use them in court and to create precedent of something that needs to be in order. So judges, lawyers, legal support systems. I think we need to donate more to them and encourage people to use them.
Thank you. Like, so we're running out of time. Teresa Rayford of Don't Shoot Portland, look at their Facebook page for information. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Oh, thank you for having me, and you have a good day, and be safe outside.
You too. This is Cecil Prescott with Celeste Carey for More Talk Radio. Stay tuned for the OMO Variety Hour.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Portland.
I wish I was a mole in the ground. Yes, I wish I was a mole in the ground. If I was a mole in the ground, I'd root that mountain down. And I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland, Portland's community-owned and democratically run radio station. Welcome to the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm Tom Becker. Joe Clement is engineering. The Old Mole is dedicated to bringing you different perspectives on history,